Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, Meg Linehan here, and welcome to day one of the Olympic tournament and our second Olympics edition podcast here at Full Time with Meg Linehan. My fellow writer, Steph Young, is here and equally as sleep deprived, and we are ready, well, as ready as we can be, to discuss this morning's stunning 3-0 loss to Sweden for the U.S. women's national team, plus the rest of the first match day in Japan. Before we get into it, subscribe to The Athletic for all of our women's soccer coverage and beyond. There's always a deal for you at theathletic.com/fulltime. Let's go right to Steph. We just have to start with Sweden. We have to start with Sweden 3, USA 0. Sweden doing the thing, first of all. Sweden very much outplaying the U.S. women's national team in pretty much every single sense on Wednesday. So I think our big debate this morning on Slack so far has been, okay, was it tactics? Was it the U.S. women's national team honestly playing like shit? Or was it both? It was both. Yeah. Why not both?
Yeah. Which I'm in the middle of doing a little write-up on it, and hopefully you'll read that as well as listening to this podcast. But the one thing I'll say is actually the more I process it, the better I feel about it. Not that we lost. Not that the United States lost and lost in style to Sweden. But just that when you talk about the tactics and them playing like shit, the playing like shit thing is fixable. Mm-hmm. The playing like shit thing, which we can, you know, maybe unpack a little bit. It's like lack of urgency. Seems like everybody needed an energy drink or something, or they mismanaged the load, or they came into this with some kind of weird opening game mentality. Something was just not there.
And not there across the board, too. Like, it wasn't just everyone.
And then the tactics. If I Vlatko's the kind of guy you're like, okay, he could probably adjust to that. You know, he'll watch footage of the New Zealand-Australia game, which is currently finishing out. The Ferns actually just scratched one back in Australia, but, like, New Zealand. Okay, here's the thing with Lindsay Horan, where, you know, she's been asked to play the six recently, but she got exposed against Sweden, where, you know, you look at that starting 11 before the game, you think, okay, that's his first choice starting 11. It's pretty strong. And then when you play them, you realize, oh, Lindsay Horan hasn't really been tested at that position. Like, not really.
Yes. And so I think Courtney Stith made a very interesting point during the first half, too, of just, could there have been a first half adjustment where you flip Sam Uys into the six and you let Horan press further up the field? I don't know if there's anything saving that midfield in the first half. I mean, you tweeted about this, but I think everybody watched that one moment, like, you know, 25-ish minutes in, where Rose Lavelle had the ball and you could see the frustration of just like, where is everyone? What are my options? Right? We finally have the ball. We haven't turned it over. I get into some space and then there's nowhere.
There was one player in front of her. It was, I think, Alex Morgan.
Yeah.
And then everybody else is just dragging behind her. It's like, when she took off, I know Rose is fast with the ball at her feet, but when she took off, where were you guys? Like, were you just afraid? Were you afraid to come out of your little turtle shell? Where was the coordination? But at the same time, like we said, like, that's not a hard thing to fix. Mm-hmm. It's not some mystery where they're like, what's going on here? It's just like, guys, come on.
Yeah. Also, as we are recording, they are showing the highlight package again from this game. And I will say, like, I don't think I need to see disappointed Carly Lloyd spitting on quite the repeat that we are getting this morning in every halftime show and every post-game show. Anyway, so, I mean, in terms of Sweden, though, I think one of the big things was, and we saw this in April in the friendly, right? Like, set pieces were going to be really key. But I think the other lesson that probably could have been taken away from that match in April, where, and this is where I get a little more concerned, is, I mean, they earned a corner kick into that, like 20-something seconds into that match in April. And we saw very early on today that they were picking up corner kick after corner kick after corner kick. And it took a while for it to pay off for them, but the second goal coming via corner kick. But I mean, it wasn't honestly either just corner kicks too. I mean, they were making runs through the defense. They found pretty much every seam available to them through the back line. Tons of pressure, forcing turnovers, forcing errors that are not characteristic of the national team. Again, I just think it was a very comprehensive performance from Sweden.
Yes, the way they played it out, they looked like they had numbers up everywhere they were on the field.
Overloads everywhere.
Yeah. Everywhere they were able to do a 2-on-1, 3-on-2, just, it, yeah. So I think things changed a little bit with the Julie Ertz sub. I'm not saying that she fixed all their problems, because once again, it wasn't just Lindsey Horan was getting marked out of the game, right? Everybody was to some degree ineffectual. But, and I was telling some friends this, at least Julie Ertz managed to change the energy, because before, Lindsey Horan was like, oh no, I'm trapped in here with Kosovar Aslani. And then Julie Ertz flipped it to like, no, you're trapped in here with me.
Yes. Which is at least a slight improvement. I mean, I do think, and I just recorded as well with the UK folks over on the offside rule, and one of my one notes was just like, if there is a silver lining we can really take away from this game, it's, you know, everyone kind of had big question marks around Julie Ertz heading into this game. And if nothing else, the energy was there. You know, she got in a couple good tackles and all that kind of stuff. So, but in terms of, yeah, the ineffectiveness, I thought Tobin Heath in particular was a bit frustrating and felt like a real regression in terms of decision making. And that was a real struggle for me in the first half, where her form obviously in the send-off games against Mexico looked extremely promising.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, between decision making, but also then two efforts off the posts, they go into halftime thinking, okay, like actually maybe it's a small miracle that we are only down one instead of down three. And then we got goals 2 and 3 by the end.
You want to hear a really like wretched stat?
Sure.
So you might already follow this account, NWSL Analytica, great mm-hmm. account. He tweeted the United States had no successful crosses
yep.
up to the substitution of Megan Rapinoe and Tierna Davidson.
Yep. The laundry list of things that went wrong. Is we're in double digits probably in terms of, you know, I think one of the really interesting things, I think, as we were watching the game and talking through the game, both like with our editor Brooks Peck in Slack, but also Sandra Herrera, the body language was also really interesting. And it wasn't just Rose Lavelle, right, with that kind of frustration, is they panned to Vlatko Andonovski on the bench. And I feel like that's really one of the first times, like, he might have been just kind of sitting there watching, but that was definitely new and different. I think obviously he's not used to losing with the U.S. women's national team at this point. He is now. But it is definitely, you know, I think a lot of us look to the rare loss for the national team as a learning experience. And now there was no adjustment in game. They got beat from minute 1 to minute 90.
So my one warning about trying to read someone's facial or body language is, I think they've done studies or like tried to do an experiment where they show people like somebody's face and they are like, I think it's in the context of acting or something where they're like, is this person like, what is this person acting out? And it's like a completely neutral face, but you can influence what the person thinks the face is telling you by like kind of subtly giving them context or like hinting to them. And then they're like, oh, this person's clearly sad, or like, you know, the acting is coming through the eyes, like all this inner turmoil. But apparently it's like an acting technique where they're like, just make a blank face. And then the context of the scene will inform the emotions that people take out of your performance, which is the same thing, like same concept here. But on the flip side, yeah, he did look worried.
Yeah. So I guess now the question becomes, you know, there were a lot of words being tossed around. You know, everyone was up very early here in the U.S. or up very late in the U.S. to watch this game. I've seen a lot of adjectives thrown around to discuss this result. You know, humbling, embarrassing, stunning. I've used dismantled a lot because I feel like they really were truly picked apart in many effective fashions by Sweden. But I guess let's try to put it in context, not yet knowing the next result.
Educational?
We hope, right?
Yeah.
That's like the best outcome, is that it is educational.
Yeah. I think after this, they're going to be watching that New Zealand-Australia game pretty closely. It's New Zealand next, right?
Mm-hmm. Like, New Zealand, yep.
I'm very sorry to the football Ferns, who are putting up a bit of resistance, like we said, against Australia, but the defending on the goals that Australia scored on them,
Yeah.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Yeah. I just wonder, you know, I think that's also the struggle of group stages sometimes, is like if you get your toughest opponent first and then you get like the real kind of downshift, right? Like, first of all, we're going to need to be looking to make sure that the team doesn't downshift as well or play down. But then you also have to get back to a higher level for Australia potentially as well. But Sweden being first is a really, you know, I thought that there was maybe some advantage to that because you come in at full stride and you're able to put out your best 11 and then get that one out of the way. And instead, they're in a very different position. I mean, Sweden is in full control of this group at this point, right?
Right. I'd say that's correct. Sweden looks fantastic.
And I think in terms of, you know, and we'll get to the other results of today, but if you want to talk about a result that maybe has that extra meaning of like, here's our statement win, right? Like, yes, Brazil has a big win today. Netherlands have a big win today. Team GB, Australia, both getting some wins. But in terms of like statement win, I think Sweden has the case for, hello, we're sitting in the best position after Wednesday.
Yeah. I mean, if you ask people to rank their likely gold, silver, bronze outcomes, I think you would have seen probably a giant shift after this game.
Yeah.
But not that Sweden was ever out of like the top, you know, three or four teams in consideration anyway. It's right. Just kind of reordered things a little bit.
Right. Right. So, yeah, it just also, it does change maybe the look of the path through knockouts now too, because obviously you go from, if you're winning the group, to playing the third place group, or if you're coming in second place to now playing the winner.
I was tracing possible USA-Canada paths because I love pain.
Right. How's that looking?
I can't remember anything. I've been awake since 2 p.m. yesterday. It's now 9:30 in the morning the next day.
Oh, no. Yeah. Yeah, that's going to be a struggle. All right. So, I mean, there's also plenty of time for us to figure out what this knockout path is going to look like in future episodes. But let's move on to some of our other results. Team GB actually starting us off this morning, 2-0 victory over Chile. Kim Little.
She's a boss. And I'm still not over her not playing in the United States anymore. It's been years. Years.
Yeah.
Like, probably children have been born in the time that she's gone, and they're, like, walking and talking now. And I'm still like, maybe she'll come back someday.
Like, Laura Harvey's back at the Reign now. Like, that could happen, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, it's like when you're a kid and your parents tell you, like, the family pet went somewhere where they could...
Went upstate where there's room. Yeah. They can run.
To run around. Yeah. And like, it's like, oh, well, I see, you know, sunshine someday. And they're like, maybe.
Yeah. Was there anything... I mean, Ellen White's second goal with the scissor kick effort was pretty fantastic. Like, I, at that point, had three screens going where I had Team GB on the iPad, I had USA on the television, and Brazil on the laptop. So, like, I was trying to follow three things at once, and I happened to glance over right as that was happening, and I was like, well then, that sure was a goal.
Honestly, what I took more out of that game was that Chile's midfield is dire. Like, they just, they had nothing against GB for a lot of that game. GB just kept pulling them, like, stretching them out, and then being like, goodbye, and bypassing them completely. And they just did it over and over again, like a little accordion.
Yeah. Yeah. I will. It's going to be interesting to see Team GB up against some of these other squads to see if they can kind of basically clone that method into stretching other teams apart. I mean, I think that's going to maybe be a little bit tougher with some of the other teams in this competition, but
yeah,
I mean, Chile, good start.
Yeah, Chile looked a little slow, maybe not the fitness that's not gonna keep up over, you know, the group stage in this weather, so yeah, we'll see.
All right, so next up, Brazil 5, China 0. China, that was a rough start for them. Yeah. But yeah. Brazil, Marta scoring in her fifth Olympics. The third goal in that game was also from Marta and was a pretty solid. I don't know if that goal gets scored against some of the other teams, but still, I mean, I think this is where, you know, you need to see some big results get put up when you're facing a team like China, and to see Brazil kind of clicking on all cylinders offensively. Dabinha playing a pretty important role, that team creating a lot of havoc as expected, right? So, yeah. You know, honestly, I don't know if there's like a huge amount to say about this game beyond that's pretty much exactly what we should have been seeing out of Brazil if Brazil have the intention of going far in this competition.
Mm-hmm. This was another one where kind of it answered a question mark about China as like the losing team as opposed to the winning team, where we're like, ooh, China had some roster shakeups from qualification to this one, got a lot of young and experienced players, and it's like, well, they got a lot of young and experienced players, and meantime you've got fifth time Olympian Marta.
Yeah, and you've got Formiga.
Yeah, exactly.
Seven time Olympian. Right. Yeah, it is. But still, like, I do like seeing, you know, obviously Brazil was not pushed into a huge amount of defending today, but to see that sort of cohesiveness, right, in terms mm-hmm. of an attacking point of view, that is very encouraging, obviously, you know, looking at that and going like, oh, I wish we had that, right?
Yeah, like, even if the goal was quote-unquote easy, you can't underestimate the mental benefit of knowing that you can score.
Like, right.
I imagine, for example, Alex Morgan is very frustrated at the moment. And the longer you go without scoring, sometimes the harder it is for you to score. And then it just becomes this thing. And so sometimes, even if it's the easy tap in, just mentally knowing that you can do it. It's like the 4-minute mile thing, right? Where there's this mental barrier and people are like, oh, it's impossible. And then some dude did it. And then like 1,000 other people did it after. It's kind of the same thing with scoring.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think we even saw that with Alex Morgan in NWSL, right? Like just getting that first goal all the way. And then they were immediately following, right? Mm-hmm. So I think there is something to that. Morgan didn't have like a huge amount of chances today. I mean, I know that I just circled this right back around to the national team, but yeah, I definitely think that there is something mental to just getting the first goal, getting that first result out of the way, especially after that opener. So, I mean, it's good for Brazil, good for, I mean, some of these other teams getting some pretty positive results. Let's move on to our only draw of the day, which is actually kind of interesting considering I feel like in group stage we get a little caginess sometimes. But Canada won, Japan won. Steph, Canada expert, what say you?
Canada not finishing off an opponent and pulling away in a game where they can and should have. It's more likely than you think. This is exactly what Bev Priestman was like cautioning against, and what she's kind of trying to like grab the team by the scruff of the neck and yank them away from this habit where they had a 1-0 game and they can't score, except for Christine Sinclair, when it was kind of a defensive oopsie from Japan as well. You know, their head coach Takakura mentioned that they were passive in this game and they kind of let Canada physically take the game to them a little too much. But, you know, they came back in the end. The Mane Obuchi goal is nice.
Yes.
It's nice.
Yes.
And the the fun thing is also it's a direct goal for Japan as well. It's like one big ball to Obuchi and like a touch or two and then bing, bing, boom.
Yep.
So, yeah, I think it's typical. It's typical of Canada. It wasn't the best performance Japan's capable of. And it's, yeah, if Canada's going to get out of group, they're going to scrape through group by, like, you know, some ties and maybe a 1-0 win that technically puts them through.
Right.
That's what it's looking like now.
All right. Well, another fun first day effort, I guess, for... I mean, I think Japan will be really interesting to watch again. I just, you know, obviously that goal was kind of this direct approach, but... Yeah, Canada really did, you know, own huge chunks of that game. And so to not finish. But also, I mean, it does give Japan now perhaps some sort of path to maybe a more favorable draw. I guess we'll see how it goes for them. All right, moving on to Netherlands, Zambia, with American football scoreline of 10-3. This was one that I watched less of simply because of the competition of three overlapping games. But every time I checked in on the score, there was another goal. We had dueling hat tricks. Steph, did you watch more of this game than I did?
No, because all the games overlapped, which it's awful, right? It's you know, we talk a little bit about, remember in the roundtable with Katie, we talked about like the Olympics being a platform that can help spur the development of the game. And then you look at the scheduling, it's like, oh, they don't care.
We're just getting these games in.
Yeah, just bing, boop, 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 just turn the games out. So no, I did not get the chance to really watch Netherlands, Zambia. But I feel like when you see 10-3, that's kind of environmental storytelling.
Yeah. Okay, so the dueling hat tricks, Viv Miedema and Barbara Banda on Zambia's part. And, I mean, I think, you know, having done a little prep work on Zambia, I was very interested to see kind of their overall approach. I mean, there was real confidence coming in from them in this tournament. This was the first time they'd ever played a team from Europe in major competition. So going up against Netherlands, right, who won Euros, came in second in the 2019 World Cup, like that is not an easy matchup. And I am sure the expectations for Netherlands were to have a clean sheet in this match. And so having one player score three goals on the Netherlands is a really interesting outcome for me.
Yeah. Miedema hat trick, 29 minutes.
Yep.
But when you look at, okay, so you look at 10-3, right? You think by the time someone has scored a hat trick on you within 30 minutes, it would take the wind out of your sails. But I think it's an incredible, like, advertisement for Zambia as a program that, you know, they were still playing their game and coming back to score three, you know, over 90 minutes in a game where they got scored on in double digits by 10. And they're like, okay, you know, we're not going to turtle up and just try to mitigate the damage. We're here. We might as well play. You know, mm-hmm. we know we're not going to win. But so let's just work on our game. Let's get some goals. Let's have fun, you know. So like we say, every single time there's one of these blowout results, you always hope that the Federation looks at that and realizes we have to invest more, not less.
Yeah. Yeah. And Minima ended up with four goals, which actually ties an Olympic record for Bridget Prinz, who's the only other player to score four in one Olympic game. And that came back in 2004. So not necessarily kind of an expected thing by the time 2021 rolls around. Yes. So Netherlands, obviously a team to keep an eye on. I mean, I think that they were always going to be up in the mix for contention for gold anyway, but not necessarily the first like real test for them in this tournament. And then we got to close out with Australia and New Zealand. And again, some fight from New Zealand at the end there to score one, but Australia 2, New Zealand 1, the final in our final match of Wednesday. I know in our notes you had written, Kerr is the obvious target.
Yeah, if you watch the game, right, you have Sam Kerr, and they're clearly trying to pump a lot of balls through her. And then, you know, that the second goal, that header that she just kind of like really nicely boops into the goal. Like, it's so deceptively easy looking, but like,
yeah.
If someone whipped a ball at me 1,000 times, literally 1,000 times, I don't think I would manage that goal.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and it's not just the goals either. Multiple times, Australia, particularly through Kerr, you know, would make that run into the box. And where was New Zealand's defense? Like, I don't know. Like, sometimes yeah. Kerr would make, like, the late run from outside the box on the service, the set piece, or the cross. And New Zealand was just like, oh, who's this?
Oh, hello. Who are you? What are you doing here?
New friends. And so, like you said, or like we discussed, you know, first games, you're kind of settling down, getting a feel for things, maybe tightening things up. So maybe New Zealand won't be so distressingly open on the mm-hmm. defense. But, you know, against a United States national team that is coming out of a game really mad and, like, wanting to prove a point and
I'm already just like, ooh, I'm so sorry, New Zealand. Like, it's not personal, it's just you really pulled the worst straw for this one, because I don't think it's going to be super pleasant. But also, yes, that cohesiveness of the New Zealand backline. I mean, even Abby Ersegg, who I think, you know, we expect better from, knowing her performances in the NWSL with the North Carolina Courage. Like, Caitlin Ford was super open on some of these plays in the like. It part of it too, though, is that New Zealand has not really gotten any time together because of the pandemic, and also Abby Ersegg and Allie Riley came to camp late. Obviously, there was that big story with Tom Sirmani getting very heated about them not being released by NWSL teams. So, I mean, there's a lot kind of stacked up against New Zealand right at the moment. And then to now add in a very, very pissed off U.S. national team for game two. I'm sorry in advance. I hope New Zealand can still welcome us into their country in 2 summers.
It does make me think, like, what if USA New Zealand had been the first game and then U.S. plays Sweden? Right. Maybe yeah. USA, New Zealand, I would still expect the United States to win for all the factors you just mentioned. Some of them are entirely beyond New Zealand's control. It's not their fault. But, you know, maybe they pick up a good win against New Zealand, they get warmed up, and then they play Sweden. Is it the same result? Maybe, actually, honestly, because you play New Zealand, once again, it's the same problem.
Yeah.
Lindsay Horan in that sixth position, she never really has to do, like, half of the job of the six, and she can spend all her time against this other team just...
creating. You know, yeah, creating offensively, yeah. No, I you know, obviously that would be a fundamental change from how it played out, but I do think that, to be fair, like, Sweden was just... You know, we discussed this a little bit in our rivalries piece too. Like, Sweden is particularly well matched to the U.S. national team, especially over the past 5 years. But I mean, you look at also the results that Sweden have gotten against Vlatko and Andonovski, and I think that they also just spent what I think feels like a lot of time watching film on the U.S. women's national team and truly figuring out, okay, if we put the overloads on this side, how do we pin back their outside backs so that way they cannot get momentum up the wings, right? Depending on who they play as forwards, there might not be a lot of, you know, basically defending from that front line all the way back. I think that played out today too. It's just, I think kind of no matter which way it shakes out, there was probably a real recipe for the Sweden game to be this rude awakening.
Mm-hmm. Maybe it's better that it happened this way.
I mean, I think that's the hope, right? Like, that's kind of like where we're at.
If the United States washes out a group, it's nothing's better that it happened anyway, no matter what.
Right.
But, you know, if they do end up advancing deeper into the tournament, maybe it's better that it happened this way. But you know what? I could also be trying to rationalize to myself, like, you know how against all available evidence, sometimes you'll try to tell yourself that a situation is good because if it's bad, then you have to admit that things are bad and that maybe you messed up.
Yeah.
Not to be too deep about it.
Yeah.
It's a self-defense mechanism.
Right.
So if people are listening to this and cringing and being like, you Americans, you always think, like, you know, you're going to win in the end. Like, not necessarily. It's part of it could be just self-delusion.
Yeah, it's kind of like, so are we the lobster in the pot and the water is starting to turn up and we don't actually know what's incoming yet? Or are we maybe in a tank somewhere swimming happily along and safe for now? So, I mean, the problem is now is just that they have made it more difficult for themselves in the long run, right? Like, yeah. It went from... you know, heading into this tournament thinking, okay, here's the path. And now the difficulty knob has been turned up a notch. And it's not just that you have to get results out of New Zealand and Australia, which feels doable, but you also have to hope for maybe Sweden to stumble somewhere along the lines to maybe get back a little bit more in control, which does not feel likely after today. But then, assuming that they finish second in group, the difficulty gets turned up, because you're facing the winner of another group. And so it's not that they're not capable of doing it, but they have just simply made the entire process more difficult.
I think if I'm a bench player and I see that, I'm thinking this could be an opportunity. Not to be too cutthroat about it, but, you know, If Vlatko's going to be like, okay, I need to adjust my tactics, and then combined with I need to rotate my roster to rest people as well. I don't know. Congrats, Lynn Williams, Golden Boot.
Maybe. I mean, you know, Christy Mewis coming into that match late. Not a huge amount of again, you know, not right. Really anyone covering themselves in glory, but also coming in as a sub. Julie Ertz was really the only one that kind of felt like, oh, okay, a difference has been made, but also that difference went from like a 3 out of 10 on the performance to like a 4.5 out of 10 on the
right.
Like, it was right. Really just like, we're making things incrementally better. So now I guess the question, and this was something I also raised earlier today, was just, you know, I think that we were probably expecting to see rotation in this match against New Zealand. And now the question becomes, do you go for that probably planned rotation, right? the same way they did in the 2019 World Cup against Chile, rotating some players in, being able to get the whole team involved, get everyone kind of set and ready to go into later games? Or do you now basically take what you think is your best 11 and send them into New Zealand and get whatever the Sweden result is out of their heads and say, please go crush someone. It's your turn to crush someone. Get the confidence, get the goals, and we'll be golden.
This is why I would never want to... All the sports psychology of it, it just feels like, you know, they know, and now you know that they know, and now they know that you know that they know, you know? And so you're trying to play yeah. some kind of, like, balancing act of, like, who knows what and how and when. And I just don't have the brain for that. I'm very small, and I don't have a lot of money, and I'm just trying my best.
All right. Well, on that note, we will leave it. Both of us have some stories to write in terms of still trying to process what was... let's maybe go with unexpected. An unexpected result.
Okay.
That feels nice and neutral.
Unless you were a Sweden fan, and then maybe they were like, I expected this. Like, F you, Yankee.
That's fair.
Yeah.
That's fair. I mean, honestly, I don't know. A team truly, like, blowing out the U.S. Women's National Team, I feel like, A, we've been waiting for it in a major tournament for a while. So it really only has been a matter of time. But also, like, be good for Sweden. Like, enjoy it. Truly.
Yeah.
It should feel extremely satisfying. And again, it had to be Sweden. Like that was one of, if we have like multiple narrative threads for this in terms of like, no one's won a World Cup and Olympics back to back. And then like all of the Rio redemption stuff, but then Sweden being in the group stage is major narrative number three. It had to be Sweden.
Yeah. You know what? It's my fault. I was like, yeah, they won the World Cup. It takes a sting out of it. The Olympics were delayed. So who cares about back-to-back? And it was like, they do. The players do. They extremely do, especially now.
So, hey, but you know what? If, let's say we're not lobsters boiling away in our pots yet, and this whole thing turns around, this is going to make one hell of a narrative story from coming to that opening game to a result. So now we just get to wait and see what direction we're going in.
Still rooting for USA Canada.
All right. On that note, let's get to work. Thank you again for tuning into our Olympic coverage here at Full Time with Meg Linehan. And thanks to Steph for her time today, especially since we both still have to file stories following this game. One quick reminder, we are dropping preview episodes before every single match day, then releasing longer shows after the games every single match day. So make sure you subscribe to Full Time now on your podcast platform of choice so you get them as soon as we publish them. You can follow all of our Olympic coverage at The Athletic, and you can support that women's soccer coverage by subscribing at theathletic.com/fulltime. Again, Full Time does not exist without the work and support of senior podcast producer Michael Zimmerman. I'm Meg. Thanks for listening, and I will be back with you on Friday to preview the second day of group stage games.